old. I know you weren't. While you are absolutely gorgeous, in spite of what you think, it's that demon glamour you have that attracts every female you meet. Further proof Richardson wasn't female. The older you get, and the more you access your powers, the stronger it becomes. I wish we could find something to turn it off.
Yeah, but doesn't Caleb have it too?
Unfortunately, no. He's a different type of beastie. His kind were bred to fight, not serve.
Serve was a polite term for demon slavery, something his father had been bound by for thousands of years, until he'd either convinced or tricked, or probably both, his master's servant into freeing him. No one was sure how Adarian had broken free of the Nether Realm, since everyone who'd made the mistake of asking him that had been gutted. As for Caleb, even though he wasn't a servant-class demon, he was now enslaved to Nick. But again, Nick had no idea how or why. Caleb wasn't into sharing any more than his father was. Nick paused in the hallway next to Cody's locker so that she could drop off her sweater.
You still haven't told me how it is you know so much about me and my powers.
I know.
She bent down to unlock the door.
Yeah. After a year, he should be used to her dodging his questions about her, her powers, and her ability to know him so well.
Nick jerked to attention as he saw a shadow run across the wall, then vanish into a crack above the bathroom door.
Did you see that?
Cody stood up immediately.
What?
Nick turned his head and used his powers to try and sense whatever had been there. But he didn't pick up on anything.
Must have been my imagination.
Spinning her lock, Cody narrowed her eyes.
Last time you said that, we almost got slaughtered by a mordant.
True, and he still had that tight feeling in his gut that usually signaled some form of demon species was nearby. His gaze went to a flash of pink approaching them. It was Brynna Adams, one of the first friends Nick had made at St. Richard's, and an all-around sweetheart. Smiling, she touched Cody on the arm.
Hey, hon, I was wondering if I could borrow you after school. LaShonda and I got drafted to do the decorations for the Fallout dance, and I could really use some help.
She turned her pitiful, begging look to Nick.
You too, Gaucher. Want to help a sister out?
I would love to, but I have to work today. Kirian has some returns I have to make and a pickup from Liza's.
Brynna pouted before she turned back to Nakota.
Please, Cody?
She hesitated, then nodded.
Sure.
Squealing, Brynna hugged her.
You're the best.
She dashed off, vanishing into the crowd.
Nick laughed. Thank goodness she grabbed you. I don't want to be in the doghouse anymore.
You're still not in the clear, buddy.
Nick sighed.
Story of my life.
The warning bell sounded.
You better go, Cody said. I don't want to see you get another detention.
You? At this rate, I should just make a bed on the floor of Richardson's room.
Tell me again why she couldn't have gotten eaten by a zombie?
Nick fell silent as he contemplated a way to facilitate that happening. It wasn't too late.
I wonder if Madog has any more copies of that game lying around.
Cody paled.
Don't even joke about that.
Now go. Saluting her, he turned and headed toward his first period, where Caleb was waiting at their computer lab table. Either Caleb or Cody was with him in every class, something they'd both insisted on. After what had happened last year with the coach who'd sold his soul for victory, literally, and who had then blackmailed Nick into helping him get items he could use to kill students, the two of them were paranoid something would grab Nick in the middle of the day if one of them wasn't nearby. Nick's home was considered a safe zone since they'd set up protection symbols and sealed the apartment. However, the school was a public building with hundreds of people in it, including some known preternaturals who were supposed to be there and who posed no threat to him. There was no way to make it completely safe without banning those students, too. Nick sat down at the same time Caleb shot to his feet.
Something wrong?
Caleb narrowed his eyes as he made a slow circle around his stool, scanning every corner of the room.
There's something here. Can you feel it?
I thought I saw a shadow in the hallway a few minutes ago.
Caleb's eyes flashed orange.
Nick glanced around to make sure no one else had seen him do that.
Yo, D, the freak eye thing? Dead giveaway, man. Sit down before the wings pop out and we both end up in a real science lab under the microscope.
Malthus, their teacher snapped. You have trouble finding your seat?
Caleb turned at Mr. Tendick's question.
No, sir.
He sat down beside Nick. The bell rang. After closing the door and dimming the classroom lights, Tendick turned on the overhead projector that displayed his desktop for everyone in the class to see. Nick sucked his breath in sharply while the rest of the room erupted into chaos. Instead of the boring icons they were used to staring at on a vomit-green background, Tendick's desktop wallpaper was a montage of Brynna Adams, naked, doing extremely lewd things. Tendick almost broke his computer as he fumbled to turn it off.
Who's responsible for this? He demanded angrily.
Utter silence rang out. Until Stone laughed again.
From the looks of it, I'd say Brynna Adams. Who knew that was hidden underneath all those high-button shirts and sweaters?
Laughing, Mason high-fived him. Pandemonium returned as everyone had a foul or gross comment to make. Everyone except Nick and Caleb. Nick was too horrified by how Brynna would react once she found out about it. And he was sure some snotwit would beeline right to her with the news. There was nothing the goobs in his school loved more than to be the bearer of really bad news, especially to the person it related to. It was like they enjoyed seeing the misery it caused firsthand. He turned to Caleb.
That wasn't Brynna, was it?
Caleb shook his head.
That was someone's idea of a sick joke.
Speaking of sick, Nick felt ill over it. His stomach heaved in sympathetic agony for her.
Can you tell who?
He did that weird headcock move as if he were listening to a song only he could hear.
No idea, but it was done for sheer malice.
Brynna will die when she finds out.
I know.
A tick started in Caleb's jaw.
Can you feel the hatred behind it?
Now that you've mentioned it, is that what the icky tickling is down my spine?
Caleb nodded. Nick sighed heavily. Well, at least he knew what was causing that symptom.
Is it demonic?
No. This is human evil. Demon hatred comes with a distinctive odor to it.
Yeah, well, this stinks too.
Nick was repulsed by whoever had done something so vicious to someone so kind. Why would anyone hurt Brynna so? In all the years he'd known her, he'd never heard Brynna say a mean thing about anyone, not even him.
All of you, Tendick snapped. Line up in the hallway and be silent. Stone, I want you to go to the office and tell Mr. Head that I need him down here pronto.
Laughing, Stone went to obey. Nick reached for his backpack.
Leave it, Gaucher, Tendick snapped. No one is to take anything out of here.
Nick hesitated. His grimoire and pendulum were in his backpack, along with his Malachi dagger. If his bag was searched and they happened upon those, it would get ugly, especially since his grimoire was written in blood. Granted, it was his blood, but adults didn't seem discriminating when it came to kids bleeding on things during school hours.
I've got it covered.
Caleb said in his mind. Releasing a relieved breath, Nick headed outside with everyone else. Caleb crossed his arms over his chest as they lined up against the wall of bright red steel lockers.
You know what the only thing worse than an evil demon is?
My mother, when she's really ticked off at me, especially when it's justified?
Caleb snorted.
No, Nick. Human cruelty. All the centuries I've lived, I've never understood it. Instead of banding together, your kind seems ever determined to tear each other down. And for what? Jealousy? I just don't get it.
And coming from a demon, that pretty much said it all. You're not seriously telling me that demons are never cruel.
Some are. But you know who they are and you see them coming. You can smell them from days away. Humans, on the other hand, are insidious. You don't see it coming until they've stabbed you in the back and through the heart.
Nick scowled at his implication. What are you saying, Kay?
I can't tell who did this, but I can tell why they did it. This was meant to shame Brenna and hurt her to the deepest level.
And as those words left Caleb's lips, Nick became aware of the conversations around him.
I told you Brenna was a slut. My mother said her mama was one, too.
I always knew her goody two-shoes persona was an act.
Man, I wish I'd known she'd do that. You think she's busy Saturday night?
Nick cringed at their ugliness.
It wasn't Brenna, he said defensively.
Mason scoffed at him.
You're an idiot, Gaucher.
Yeah, another student concurred. Didn't you see that in there?
With farm animals, too?
Oh, my God, I'm so disturbed.
You are? Imagine how that horse felt.
They all burst out laughing. Nick started to respond, but Caleb stopped him.
Let it go.
That was easier said than done. Brenna's
my friend. Before Caleb could comment, the principal stalked past them and into the room.
Nick stood on his tiptoes so that he could see Tendick show the principal the horrific montage through the window in the classroom door. His pocket started vibrating. Nick pulled out his Nokia 9000 and flipped it open to see he had a new email. As he tried to access it, his phone blew up with texts about Brenna and the photographs. Apparently, their classroom wasn't the only one spammed with that filth. An instant later, a door down the hallway opened. Brenna ran out, sobbing hysterically. Laughter from her classroom rang in the hall and mixed with the laughter of the jerks around him. Laughter that was only drowned out by a few dickweeds making offers to her. His heart aching, Nick started to go after her and calm her down. Caleb caught his arm in a tight grip.
I can't stress enough to you that you need to stay out of this.
Why?
Use your powers, Nick. Look at what's about to happen.
Nick glanced around until he found something shiny enough to use for scrying, the silver on the water fountain. It wasn't very big, but it was enough that he could focus his powers with it. And there, in that small, 2-inch strip, he glimpsed the horror that was about to become Brenna's life over this single act of cruelty. In that moment, he completely disagreed with Caleb. She needs a friend.
Yes, she does. But right now, the administration is looking for someone to blame for this. You walk in there too soon, and this will be hung around your neck, trust me.
That would be his luck, too. Even so, Nick would deny it if not for the fact that Caleb had a lot more life experience to draw from. You didn't argue colors with Picasso, Carfax with Richard Petty, and you definitely didn't question human behavior with Caleb. Standing down, Nick felt that strange sensation again. While Caleb had assured him this was human in origin, he wasn't so sure. There was something else here. Something dark, cold, lethal. And it wasn't Caleb.
Chapter 3. Adarian froze as he felt a sensation he hadn't experienced in thousands of years. For a full minute, he didn't move as he tried to pinpoint it. If he didn't know better, he'd swear it belonged to Noir's primary guardian. But he'd made sure when he escaped the Dark Lord's nether realm that the only creature who could find him would be punished to the point he'd never be able to track him down. No, it couldn't be Seth. Seth was still being tortured. Noir would never take a chance on sending Seth after him. This was something else.
Where are you?
More to the point,
what are you?
He felt the creature pulling back before he could locate its exact position. Had it detected him? That was always his biggest concern. While he couldn't be defeated openly, everyone was susceptible to a sneak attack, especially when they didn't know what was stalking them.
Malachi, you have a visitor.
His gut tightened. Was the visitor the one he'd sensed, or was it someone or something else? His senses and powers on full alert, he allowed the guard to cuff him so that he could be escorted to the visitation center. As one of the most ferocious and feared inmates in Angola, he was always heavily guarded and never allowed near civilians without being fully shackled.
something he found hysterical since the only thing that kept him here was himself. There were no walls built by man that he couldn't tear down with a whisper, no chain forged he couldn't melt, but he chose to live here for several reasons. The primary one being that all of this concentrated human malice cloaked his presence from those who were searching for him. The inmates' negativity and hostility also fed his powers. With so many willing victims and predators on tap, his juices never thinned. He always had someone feeding him. To a demon, this was paradise. The guard opened the door and stood back so that Adarian could enter the small cubicle. As he sat down, the lights dimmed, and he was allowed to see his visitor on the other side of the glass. Adarian glared at the blonde man, who was drumming his fingers idly against the tabletop.
What are you doing here?
You told me to keep you posted.
That gravelly tone was spoken at a level that no human could hear, only a demon. And while he'd wanted updates on his son, he'd assumed they'd come through Caleb, or in his cell at night, not out in the open like this. The last thing he needed was for someone to identify the creature in front of him.
Then speak and be quick about it.
His visitor arched a brow at Adarian. Shifting slightly in his chair, he caused a portion of his black button-down shirt to fall open, revealing a grisly skull tattoo in the center of his chest. His black eyes flashed with anger.
You don't order me around, Adarian. I'm not one of your slaves. I'm your master.
No, Adarian corrected. You're my partner.
You bargained with me,
he reminded Adarian.
True, and you accepted, thereby making us equals. You help me, I help you. That exchange of services makes us partners.
Grimm didn't appear to care for that in the least. But then Death thought himself above everyone and everything. One day, he would learn the truth. No one was above dying. Not even Death. Grimm growled in the back of his throat.
I know now where your son gets his most irritating qualities.
Adarian didn't comment on that.
How goes his training?
Slowly. He lacks focus. Not to mention, whoever blocked his powers did a great job of it. Unlocking them isn't as easy as it should be. Some of that is because he hasn't been really hurt yet. His mother has wrapped him in a layer of love so thick it's hard to breach. The kid needs tragedy in his life. Without that, it's impossible to push his hatred and make him act on it. He needs someone to hate with a burning passion.
Adarian curled his lip. He couldn't afford for his son to be slow. The sooner Nick learned how to hate, the sooner he'd learn to kill, and the quicker Adarian would be able to leave this place and have the freedom he'd craved since the moment of his birth. Unlike his son, he'd always known who and what he was. His mother had purposefully conceived him to destroy his own father and to buy her freedom from the dark primal gods she served. From that moment of his birth, he'd been breastfed venom and suckered on bitter hatred for everyone and everything. As soon as his powers had manifested and he'd killed his father, his mother had sold him to Noir to be enslaved and used by the sadistic god who'd wanted to destroy his enemies and take over the human realm. Adarian still had nightmares over that quaint experience. If he'd ever possessed a shred of decency or humanity, his time spent in Asmodea had destroyed it. And those gory centuries spent there were why he'd gutted his mother the instant he'd escaped Noir's custody, why he would never allow himself to be enslaved again, not to anyone, even Grimm. But Grimm wanted to see the apocalypse he'd been created for. And like Adarian, Grimm didn't want to be in a subservient role when he delivered it. He wanted to lead. Adarian could respect that. However, he didn't really care about Grimm. He wasn't capable of caring. At least, that was the lie he told himself.
You want your apocalypse, I want my revenge. Train my boy and deliver his powers to me. I need them.
Grimm nodded.
If you would allow me to kill his mother.
No!
Adarian growled.
You harm her and I will rain down a hell on you that you can't even imagine.
Grimm's eyes snapped fire from the fury he kept repressed because he knew better than to show it to Adarian. Not even Grimm would get away with that.
Fine. But you better remember what I've done to work this little miracle for you. I want a piece of Nick when all is said and done. You can have it. Now go, and don't let me see you here again.
Adarian got up and left the room. His original plan had been to use his son to rebuild his army. But last year, as Nick's powers had grown, he'd felt his own start to wane, something he couldn't allow anyone to know. There couldn't be two Malachis in existence. It was forbidden. But if he could unlock Nick's powers and have Death kill his son before Adarian lost all of his, he could feed on Nick's heart and absorb his powers too. It would give him the strength of two Malachis. Then no one would ever be able to defeat him. He wouldn't have to fear Noir or anything ever again. That was what he lived for. Then he'd be able to find the ones who'd cursed him to this existence and end that curse once and for all. But first, Nick had to die. After finally being liberated from his detention, Nick wanted to hunt down whoever had humiliated Brenna and beat them until they begged for mercy. Never in his life had he been angrier. His stomach knotted, he headed into the gym to meet up with Cody, Madog, Caleb, and Lashonda. The son of two scientists, Madog was one of the smartest people Nick had ever met. The kid knew something about everything. And like Nick, he felt invisible unless one of their resident bullies needed someone to kick or shove into a locker. Just under 6 feet tall, Madog had dark blonde curly hair and bright blue eyes. He always wore glasses and preferred hoodies over all other attire. Lashonda was one of the prettiest girls in the school, barely an inch shorter than Madog. She had a pair of hazel-brown eyes that practically glowed, and her dark brown hair was ever-changing. This week, she wore it straightened and to her shoulders. She'd been one of Brenna's best friends since second grade, and the two of them were almost always together. "Are we it?" Nick asked, dropping his backpack next to Caleb's. Lashonda's eyes sparkled furiously. "Everyone else banged out. They didn't want to be on a committee with a slut like Brenna." She curled her lip. "I take that back, but I won't repeat what some of the guys said. God, people disgust me." "It's ridiculous, so don't get me started." Nick let out a long breath, then frowned at Madog. "Boy genius? Any chance you can shed some light on who planted that crap against her?" "I wish, but they deleted it from Tendick's computer immediately and reformatted the hard drive before writing over it. Since it's legally considered child porn, they were afraid of a lawsuit. Head is hoping he can scare someone into a confession." "Yeah, 'cause that works so well on hoodlums," Lashonda huffed. "I don't know about you guys, but without Brenna, I really don't want to do this. Screw the dance, let the jerks show up to an empty gym. It's what they deserve. I just want to go home and make sure she's okay. I've been trying to call her, but she won't pick up." Cody folded her arms over her chest. "I think we all want to check on her." Nick agreed. "I've been over it 1,000 times in my head, and I can't figure out who or why anyone would do this to her. Sean, you have any ideas?" "None. It's not like she goes around collecting enemies, you know. We're talking about Brenna here. Has there ever been a nicer person created, ever?" Nick would say his mother, but he didn't want them to mock him for it. Lashonda checked her phone. "Why don't we call in a rain check and do this on Monday? Hopefully Bryn will be back by then." Nick nodded. "Sounds like a plan. Are you going over to Brynna's from here?" "Yeah." "Call me and let me know how she's doing." Lashonda patted him on the arm. "Will do. I'll see you guys later." Madog shrugged his backpack over his shoulder. "I wish I could have seen the photos." Caleb arched his brow at the comment.
"Not for that reason,"
Madog snapped as he realized what Caleb was thinking.
"I don't want to see her in any kind of graphic portrayal, but I know the pictures had to be photoshopped. If I had a copy, I could prove it."
Nick scoffed. "Given how foul they were, you're better off not seeing them. I'm still traumatized." Madog pushed his glasses back up on the bridge of his nose.
You know, I tried to invent eye bleach when I was a kid. Didn't work out, though. But I haven't given up. One day I will find a way to erase recent memories before they move into permanent storage.
From anyone else, that would be a joke. From Madog? You could put it in the bag.
Madog retrieved his hoodie. I'll see you all tomorrow.
Nick didn't speak until he was alone with Cody and Caleb. Is there really no way to do some of the voodoo hoodoo mojo things you two do to find out who was behind it? Caleb snorted.
Nice rhyme there, Dr. Seuss, and sorry. There's nothing I have to trace it.
Cody dittoed Caleb's sympathy and his comment. Nick checked his watch.
Fine, I need to head over to Kieran's for work anyway.
Caleb retrieved his backpack.
I'll walk you over.
Nick hated the thought of being walked home like he was incompetent. Not your prom date, Kay. Don't want to be neither.
Have no fear. You're too hairy for my taste, Gaucher. No offense, you're not pretty or sexy enough to change them.
Nick gaped. Now that was just hurtful and mean. Why you want to hurt me in my tender place like that, Cher? Don't let this calm exterior fool you. I got feelings, too. Cody laughed at them. I swear, there are times when it seems you two are the ones dating, and I feel like the third wheel.
Aw, baby, Nick said with a grin. You know better. You're the only girl for me.
Caleb is no competition whatsoever for you.
Caleb shoved Nick's backpack at him.
Get out of here before I hurt you.
Laughing, Nick opened the door that led to the back hallway, then froze as he saw a small group of students gathered around graffiti someone had painted across several lockers. Spencer Sexton is gay. If that wasn't bad enough, there were photos of Spencer necking with another guy taped all around the words.
What the?
Students, Mr. Head snapped as he came rushing toward them. Get out of here now, disperse!
As Nick left the building, Spencer grabbed him and hauled him to the side, away from the cameras and any possible faculty sightings. Even though he was only 15, Spencer was already over 6 feet tall, with enough muscle in his body that most people thought he was a lot older. Caleb started to follow after them, but Nick motioned to him that it was all right. He could handle Spencer without help, and he had a pretty good idea what Spencer wanted with him. And the last thing Spencer would want for this was an audience.
Who did you tell?
Spencer growled in his ear.
Nobody.
He glared at Nick.
You're the only one who knows about me, Gaucher.
Something Nick had discovered purely by accident one night when he'd stumbled across Spencer on a date with another guy in the back row of the almost empty movie theater.
I told you I'd take it to my grave, Spencer, and I meant it. I haven't breathed a word of it to anyone, ever, not even in my sleep.
Are you sure your boyfriend didn't spill it? He saw the doubt in Spencer's eyes, but he didn't know if that was for him or the boyfriend.
On my life, Spencer, I wouldn't do this to you. I wouldn't. I know what it's like to be picked on for things you can't help. I'm not about to do that to someone else.
Spencer finally let go of him. He raked a trembling hand through his hair. The anguish in his eyes made Nick feel for him.
Those photos aren't me. Where did they get them?
I don't know. Nick glanced over to Cody and Caleb, who were close enough to watch them, but not enough to overhear their conversation.
Someone's trying to mess with people's lives for some reason.
We know what they did to Brenna is a lie. Maybe that's what they're doing to you, too.
Maybe they have no idea that you're really gay.
But those rumors had been circulating about Spencer since grade school. While everyone pretty much suspected the truth, no one had proof of it. Spencer even had a girlfriend he'd been dating for over a year now. The last thing Spencer wanted was to be bullied or attacked for being different. Nick couldn't blame him for that, and he definitely wouldn't judge him for it either. Caleb and Cody approached them slowly.
You okay, Spencer?
Cody asked. His eyes watering, Spencer shook his head.
No. I feel like I've been publicly violated. But I'm gonna find out who did this, and when I do...
He turned his steely gaze to Nick.
You'll be real glad you're not them.
Already am.
Sexton!
Mr. Head shouted from the door. I need you here immediately. Sighing, Spencer headed over. Nick jumped as his phone went off again. Pulling it out of his pocket, he saw a new text message from an unknown number. Want more dirt on our classmates? Visit my site, theothersideofstrichards.com. Got you, you worthless pig dog. Nick actually smiled. Cody frowned. Got who? Nick held his phone up in triumph. Whoever is doing this just made the mistake of texting me with their stupidity. I'm going to Bubba's. Y'all coming? Cody inclined her head. Right behind you. You lead. Gripping his phone, Nick walked the few blocks over to Royal Street, where Bubba's store, the Triple B, was located. The only combination gun and computer store in the world, that Nick knew about anyway, it had the largest selection of guns and computers in the state of Louisiana, which said it all about the owner. Bubba was a different breed, unlike anyone Nick had ever known. He danced to his own tune, and didn't care who saw him do it, either. Bubba was also a walking enigma. Most people dismissed him as a total rube, but that would be like trying to define the ocean as simply wet. While Bubba did have a thick Tennessee mountain drawl, he graduated with honors at the top of his class from MIT. He had several PhDs, including a Doctor of Science degree in theoretical nuclear and particle physics. Nick didn't even know for sure what that was, other than impressive. The man also knew more about horror movies than anyone with a real life should. In fact, Bubba was forever wearing a black horror t-shirt of some kind, and it was usually accompanied by a red flannel shirt, even in the summer heat. Though, to be fair to Bubba, the server farm Bubba ran at the Triple B had to be kept around 50 degrees year-round, and since that was where Bubba spent much of his day, Nick could understand wanting something a little warmer than a t-shirt. Still, that was why the good Lord had given them hoodies. Too bad Bubba couldn't find that section of a clothing store. But as Nick entered, he drew up short as he caught sight of Bubba behind the glass counter in an expensive black suit with a blue dress shirt and blue striped tie. Even more shocking, Bubba had on a pair of glasses, and his thick beard had turned into a fashionable goatee. Holy hand grenades. The man almost looked normal. He was still humongously tall with an aura of, I'll kick your butt if you laugh at me, but... Please, don't tell me you finally blew up, Mark. Someone die? Nick asked. Bubba gave him a droll stare. I'm about to leave to pick my mom up from the airport, and I know she's gonna want to stop by church as soon as we get into town, so that she can thank God she didn't crash. That only confused Nick more. I've seen you in church a lot, and you've never been dressed like that before. That's 'cause my mama wasn't there. If I went into a church in jeans with her, she'd beat me senseless. That woman still won't wear pants to mass. She says it's disrespectful to the priest and to God. He held his hand up. Don't ask. I've tried talking sense into her, but she don't listen to me. Nick was baffled by how anyone could cow the mighty Bubba of all people. The man was epic, larger than life, most of all. Yeah, but you're old. Bubba arched a brow at him, as if he was offended by Nick's words. I'm not that old. I've barely cracked past 30, and in Mama's ears it don't matter, boy. Hell, she still cuts my meat up for me at Thanksgiving before she gives me my plate. I'm lucky she's not still spooning me Gerber in a high chair. Caleb and Nick laughed at the ludicrous image. Cody made a sound of irritation. Well, I think that's sweet. Bubba inclined his head respectfully to her. Thank you, Miss Cody. Now what can I do for y'all? Nick stepped forward to hand Bubba his phone. There's someone messing with the kids at school, posting awful stuff about them, and whoever it is just texted me this website. Can you help us find out who it is? Bubba grumbled in the back of his throat. I would, you know that. But I can't be late to pick up Mama. She'll end up adopting half the staff at the airport if I leave her there unattended. Mark! He shouted out so unexpectedly that all three of them jumped. A few seconds later, Fingerman snatched at the curtain that separated the front of the store from the back room. In his mid-20s, Mark had shaggy brown hair and bright green eyes. Dressed in a baggy tan t-shirt that had seen better days, he looked like he hadn't shaved in a couple of days. Ah, that was where Bubba's beard had gone. Mark had been working for Bubba on and off for years. But more than that, the two of them were best friends, and Mark was every bit as crazy as Bubba. Wait, on second thought, he was even crazier. Bubba didn't make a habit of dousing himself in duck urine to ward off zombies. Thank goodness Mark wasn't wearing it today, because the stuff stank with a big capital S.
Dang it, Bubba, how many times do I have to tell you not to do that? You scare the crap out of me with that booming voice of yours. It carries and breaks the sound barrier. One day you're going to cause me to leave a pile of it in the back room, and I'm not going to clean it up. You cause it, you clean it.
Bubba mumbled something that sounded like Latin.
I'm not a wimp, Mark said defensively. And I'm not your dog. Don't bark at me, boy. One day you're going to make me bite.
Nick cleared his throat to remind the two of them that they weren't alone.
Guys, my phone, malicious lunatic at school, your mom at the airport.
That snapped Bubba's attention to where Nick wanted it. He handed the phone to Mark.
I need you to trace the IP on this and find out who registered the domain. You all right? I can do that.
I know you can. That's why I called you out here. Mark clenched his jaw in a way that let Nick know he was having to force himself not to comment. After a few seconds, he gestured toward the door.
Know what you need to get your mama? It's a long trip from Bucksnort to New Orleans, and God love the good-hearted woman. She never met a stranger a day in her life.
I'm going. Bubba opened his jacket to check the pocket and make sure he had his wallet. He patted his pants, then frowned. Mark picked his keys up from the counter and held them out. With a sigh of relief, Bubba took them from him.
Thanks.
Inclining his head, Mark didn't say anything until after Bubba had left the store.
I swear I love his mama, but I hate whenever she comes to town. That boy gets so beside himself he can't think straight.
Caleb snorted.
I didn't know he ever thought straight.
Mark laughed at that.
True. All right, y'all. Come on back and I'll trace this for you.
They walked around the counter and through the curtains. Cody took a seat at the long, tall work table that was strewn with various computer parts. When she reached for a motherboard, Mark grabbed her hand.
Make sure you ground yourself before you touch anything.
He stressed the last word. She frowned. Ground myself? I'm not floating, am I? From anyone else, that would sound like a joke, but since Cody could actually fly... Mark placed her hand on the metal computer casing.
Static electricity is your worst enemy in computers, and when pumping gas.
Caleb and Nick exchanged an amused grin. Knowing Mark, this had to be good. After all, Mark was the only one Nick knew who could set fire to his Jeep by simply answering his cell phone.
Pumping gas? Nick asked.
Yeah, I once blew up my uncle's motorcycle by accident and set fire to my favorite pair of jeans. Of course, it had been even more wrong had I done it intentionally. Anyway, I slid off the vinyl seat and touched the nozzle without grounding myself. The spark ignited the fumes, and that was all she wrote. You'd be amazed how many people a year blow themselves up. Believe it or not, I'm not the only one. Not exactly sure how that makes me feel, though. Glad I'm not the only one, but still.
Mark sat down at the bench and pulled the keyboard toward him.
Did you know there's been over 200 reported cases of people who ignited themselves in their cars because they didn't ground themselves before touching the nozzle? It's true. Most are women who started pumping gas, that is. Then got back in the car, and when they got back out to touch the nozzle, kaboom. I have to say that I am not proud to be one of the very few men who have done it. Kind of embarrassing, but if I can keep one of you from learning my lesson, then it's worth a little humiliation. I'm just glad Bubba wasn't there to see it and mock me for it.
Nick laughed. That's what I love most about you, Mark.
What?
Your whole life purpose seems to be to serve as a warning to others on what not to do. Laughing with him, Mark started typing.
Sad but true, kid. Sad but true. Now let's see what we can find.
They waited quietly while Mark worked. Nick's phone started ringing. Without missing a single keystroke, Mark handed it to him. Now that was impressive. But then Mark was the master of one-hand speed typing, something he'd perfected while keeping one hand buried in a potato chip bag while he worked or surfed. Pressing the answer button, Nick held his phone to his ear. Hello?
Are you dead?
Nick hesitated at the sound of Kirian's deeply accented voice.
No, but that tone sounds like my death might be imminent. Why?
You know what time it is?
Nick glanced to the clock on the wall and cringed. It was after 5.
Sorry, boss, I got distracted.
Yeah, and you didn't call your mother, and she called me worried sick about you.
Nick scowled. Why didn't she call me?
She tried, and you didn't answer. Then she tried again, and it rolled straight to voicemail. She now thinks you're dead in a ditch.
Great. Detention and grounded. Just what he wanted. I'll give her a call.
And?
I should have called you and told you I'd be late to work. I'm really sorry, Kirian, I am. I had something come up at school, and I've been working on it since I got out of detention. I just let time get away from me. It won't happen again, boss, I promise.
It's fine, Nick. But only because this isn't a habit with you. That's why we got worried. You're always so good about keeping in touch that when we lose you, it rattles us.
Nick cringed at that. He couldn't stand to upset his mother.
Sorry, I'll head on over and...
Don't worry about it. I don't have anything that can't wait until tomorrow. Go see your mom so that she'll know you're all right.
Okay, you sure you don't need me to do anything?
Did you check with Kel about the status on my replacement sword?
I did, and I tracked it down. It'll be delivered tomorrow morning. They accidentally sent it to Cleveland. I also dropped off your dry cleaning on my way to school, and we'll pick it up tomorrow afternoon. During lunch, I scheduled an appointment for the Lamborghini to be serviced on Friday, and I got Mr. Poitier to agree to pick it up and drop it off for you. I emailed Asheron about Halloween, and he said to tell you and Talon that there will be 2 new additions moved in for it, someone named Gallagher and Wolf. They'll arrive on the 28th. I've already emailed Talon about it and was going to tell you when I got over there. Lastly, I called Liza, and she will have Rosa's birthday present from you wrapped and ready. I'll grab it on my way home and make sure Rosa gets it tomorrow along with the card you have in your top desk drawer. Anything else you need?
No. You are on top of it, and I appreciate it. I really am impressed with you, Nick. You're a good kid.
Nick's face ignited. He wasn't used to praise from anyone, and it always embarrassed him to get it.
I'm just trying to do my job, boss.
But it was more than that. Nick owed Kirian a debt that couldn't be repaid. The man had saved his life after Nick had been shot last year. Not only had Kirian kept Nick's friend from killing him, he'd taken Nick to the hospital and paid for them to patch him up. It was that debt that had led to Nick working part-time for him so that he could repay the hospital bill.
All right,
Kirian said kindly.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Okay, if you need anything else...
Kirian laughed.
Bye, Nick.
Nick hung up, then dialed his mother at work. Since she didn't have a cell phone of her own, he had to call in on the restaurant line.
Sanctuary Owners Alliance, how may I help you?
He'd know that sweet drawl that was tinged with a hint of French accent anywhere. It belonged to a tall, beautiful blonde woman who was all legs and all curves.
Hi, Amy, it's Nick. Can my mom come to the phone for a second?
Boy.
She stressed that word in a way that made him inwardly cringe.
Your hide is so tanned, I could make shoe leather out of it. Hang on and let me get her.
Nick dreaded what he knew was coming. Sure enough, he heard the tears in his mother's voice.
Nicky, baby, are you okay?
I'm such a jerk. How could he have forgotten to call her? She'd been bad to worry about him before he'd been shot. Since that night when he'd almost died, she was barely one step short of insane when it came to his well-being.
I am so sorry, Mom. I didn't mean to worry you. But are you all right?
I am.
Those two words cured the tears. It also sent her reeling into a realm of anger that instantly knotted his gut.
How dare you scare me like that? Have you any idea how worried I've been? Why didn't you answer your phone? Where have you been? Why aren't you at work? I swear, if you're hanging out with those hoodlums again, I'm gonna ground you until you're in an old age home. You hear me? Why aren't you answering me, Nick, huh? 'Cause you always yell at me when I interrupt you. Are you sassing me? No, ma'am.
That would be all kinds of stupid, especially in her current mood. She let out a sound of ultimate peeve.
You grounded for a week, you hear me? But, Mom, don't you but-mom me. I've had it with your irresponsibility. And you think you're mature enough to drive and date, really, Nick? You can't even remember to dial a phone, or take trash to the curb, or lower a toilet seat, or pick your underwear up from the floor. And you think you can handle operating a car in New Orleans traffic? I don't think so. You got a long way to go to become the man you think you are. You hear me?
He really, really hated those last three words that she said every other sentence whenever she yelled at him. He clenched his teeth to keep from arguing.
Now I have to go and get back to work. I don't know where you are, but you have 15 minutes to walk through the doors here. If you're further away than that, you're grounded for a month. You hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Clock's ticking, Buster. You better run for it.
She hung up on him. Sighing, Nick looked at Cody, then Caleb.
We heard, Mark said. Pretty sure the folks in Slidell heard, too. You better get on.
I'm going. He held his phone out to Mark.
I got everything I need. I'll call you once I get it all tracked.
All right, thanks. You want us to come with you?
Cody asked. Yeah, that was all he needed. There was no telling what insanity his mom would come up with if she knew he'd been with Cody when he should have been at work.
No, she already thinks I'm goofing off instead of working. If she sees you guys there, she'll really be hot. I'll catch y'all later. Nick grabbed his backpack from the floor, shrugged it over his sore shoulder, and ran up the street toward Ursuline's as fast as he could. Luckily, Bubba's store wasn't all that far from Sanctuary. But he didn't want to push it. The sooner he got there, the happier his mom would be. He didn't slow down until he reached the doors of the three-story red brick building that housed one of the most famed barn grills in New Orleans. There was a huge bear of a man at the door to greet all newcomers. Most wouldn't think anything about it. But Nick knew whoever was on door duty was there to assess the threat level of any preternatural clientele entering the building. And for reasons no one would explain, the doorman always had them cue Sweet Home Alabama on the jukebox whenever Acheron showed up. There was much about Sanctuary Nick still had to learn. With long blonde hair and beefy arms, the doorman was fierce and intimidating. Until he recognized Nick, and gave him a wide, cocky grin. Nick let out a relieved breath. Oh, good. It was Dev. One of four identical quadruplets, Dev was always easygoing and fun to be around. While Dev's brothers, Sharif and Quinn, were nice enough, Remy was the one who scared him. If Nick had to face his mom in this mood, he was glad Dev was on duty. He was the one being who might keep his mom from killing him. Hey, Dev.
Dev clicked his tongue. Nicky, 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 I don't envy you, mon fille. Your mama gonna take a bite of your hide and mount it to the wall.
If the knot in his stomach drew any tighter, he'd have diamonds in the toilet later.
Yeah, I don't envy me either. Want to trade?
Dev laughed. You'd think that, but no. Believe me, you don't want to see my maman when she's angry.
You,
maman likes. Me not so much these days. Trust me, she has a bear of a temper.
Nick snorted at Dev's play on words. Dev was poking fun at the fact that he and his family were shapeshifters, whose alternate form was that of a bear. Shaking his head at Dev, he went inside. It took a minute for his eyes to adjust to the dark interior. Dev's sister Amy was at the bar, picking up drinks.
Now where were you, mister?
He jumped at his mom's angry tone in his ear. How had she snuck up on him? Dang, he could rent her out as a ninja.
At school, I had detention.
Go ahead, Nick. Throw gas on that fire.
For what?
She growled.
Being late?
She narrowed her blue eyes at him.
And why were you late? Stone slammed me.
She flung out her hand to signal him to shut up.
Don't even start that. You take responsibility for your own actions, you hear me? Now why were you late?
He ground his teeth as he forced himself not to show any kind of anger toward her. But he was really getting tired of being treated like an idiot who couldn't tie his own shoes.
I didn't get to class until after the bell rang.
There, that was the truth.
Nicholas Ambrosius, do not test me, not today. I am not in the mood for your crap.
You hear me? He mocked silently in his head, because he wasn't quite stupid enough to do that out loud. He forced himself to speak in a calm tone.
I don't know what to tell you, Mom. I screwed up by not calling, and I'm sorry. It was a bad day at school, and two of my friends are under fire. I was just trying to help them, and I wasn't thinking about myself.
She frowned.
What do you mean, under fire? Someone started attacking them publicly and posting awful pictures of them and insults for everyone to see.
Anger darkened her gaze as he struck the nerves in her that Grimm had mentioned. The one thing his mother couldn't stand was for anyone to gossip or speculate about someone else. She'd had too much of that done to her when she'd ended up pregnant with him.
Who? You don't know Spencer, but Brynna was the other one they attacked.
Adams? She asked incredulously. He nodded. Now his mother looked as sick as he'd felt.
Why would anyone attack Brynna?
I don't know.
That's what I was trying to find out. She ran out of school crying earlier, and I just wanted to help her, you know?
Finally, his mother hugged him.
All right, Boo. You're forgiven, but still grounded.
Of course he was. She gently pushed him toward the small booth where he normally did his homework.
I'll bring you some food. You get your homework started.
Not happy about this at all, Nick obeyed before he got into more trouble. He sat down and started rummaging through his backpack. As he pulled out his math book, he saw that shadow flit across the wall again. Turning his head, he tried to pinpoint it, but it was gone so fast, he wasn't sure he could trust his eyesight in the dim room. Suddenly, his grimoire heated up beneath his hand. With a hiss, he snatched his hand back. He blew cool air across his palm to help with the stinging while he opened the book with his other hand. All right, what are you trying to tell me? He pulled out his pendulum and pricked his fingertip. Reciting the spell to activate it, he squeezed 3 drops of blood onto the page. For a second, it didn't react. Then the blood rolled across the page until it formed the words, horror, terror, nightmares, dreams. Some things are never what they seem. Discord, strife, shame, and pain. Into all lives they will reign, but none of them will cut so deep as the enemy you did not see. He was still trying to decipher it when his gaze was drawn to the napkin holder. There, in the shiny metal, he glimpsed the future to come. It was Brynna, and she was hanging by her neck in her bedroom. Chapter 4 Nick jumped up and fumbled for his phone. He had to get a hold of Brynna before she let her hurt feelings overtake her common sense. Life was hard for everyone, but pain was transitory, and it would eventually leave. He knew that better than most, since he'd been spoon-fed a steady diet of shame, humiliation, and agony since the moment of his birth. Death was forever. There was no undo button on it. Not unless you knew how to summon Artemis, and even then, there was no guarantee she'd take you. His hand shaking from his panic, he dialed Brynna's number and waited. She didn't answer. As he was hanging up, his mom returned with a hamburger and fries. Her brows drew together in a worried frown.
What's wrong? Mom, I gotta go.
The fury returned to make her eyes snap blue fire at him.
Sit your butt down, boy. You're on restriction. I know, but...
No buts, she snapped. Sit down and do your homework. Now! He shook his head.
You're gonna have to ground me again. I've gotta go check on Brynna. I got a really bad feeling, and she's not answering her phone. I have to make sure she's okay.
She took a step back and eyed him suspiciously.
Is that really what you're doing?
Cross my heart, Mom. He made a small cross in the center of his chest, something he only did when he meant it.
All right, go and check on her then. I won't hold that against you. You want to take the burger with you?
Nick grabbed it from her tray, then kissed her cheek.
Can I leave my books here? I'll be back as soon as I make sure she's not doing something stupid.
Sure. Taking a bite of his burger, he headed for the door.
Hey, Nick?
He paused to look back at his mother and swallowed his food.
Yes, ma'am? You're a great kid. Much better than I deserve. I just wanted you to know that. While I'm hard on you, I do see how wonderful you are. You do me real proud, and I mean that.
Her words warmed him.
Thanks, Ma. I love you, too.
Smiling at her, he rushed out to get to the streetcar so that he could bust tail to make it to Brenna's house as fast as possible.
This would be so much easier if I had a car.
Or if Ambrose or Death would teach him how to teleport, now there was a power he'd love to have. Of course, with his luck, he'd teleport someplace bad, like the Arctic Circle, while in his underwear. Or buck naked into his school's gym during a pep rally. Yeah, that'd be a lot worse than freezing his nether regions on an iceberg. He'd much rather have penguins point and laugh at him than the girls in his class. He came around the corner of the French Market at a dead run. For once, luck was with him. The streetcar came in right as he reached the platform. And he made the best time ever getting to Brenna's house. A huge, dark gray antebellum mansion, it dwarfed his entire apartment building. Even though it made him uncomfortable to be around a place this nice and elegant, he'd always liked coming here. Whenever Brenna's mom was in town, she usually had fresh cookies or cupcakes sitting in a glass case on their kitchen island. And her dad had never once looked at him as if he was trash, or made a comment over the fact that Nick didn't belong around his daughter. All of the Adamses were as nice as they could be, something he deeply appreciated. Nick opened the wrought iron gate and sprinted across the small front yard and up the steps to the front door. He rang the bell. A few seconds later, Brenna's little brother Jack opened the door and stared up at him.
Yeah? Is Brenna home?
Jack shrugged.
Don't know. Don't care.
I am so glad I'm an only child. Nick sighed and tried again.
Is your dad around?
He's running errands. Be back later.
Can I come in and see if Brenna's in her room?
Jack narrowed his gaze on Nick.
Ain't no boy not related to us supposed to be up in her room ever.
I won't go in it. You can come with me and make sure I stay in the hallway, please. I won't be here long. I just want to make sure she's all right.
Yeah, okay. I heard her crying earlier. Figured it was something stupid. She cries all the time anyway. When she's happy, when she's mad, when she's sad, whenever she breaks a nail or has to take medicine. Girls are so weird. I try not to pay attention to them.
Jack stepped back so that Nick could enter the house. Nick headed for the stairs.
Where's her room?
First one on the left.
But Jack didn't follow him up. Instead, he drifted past the stairs toward their kitchen. Taking the stairs two at a time, Nick didn't pause until he got to her door.
Please be okay, please.
Terrified of what he might find, he knocked.
Hey, Bryn? It's me, Nick. You in there?
Go away.
There was no missing the tears in her voice.
I can't. Not until I know you're all right.
Nick leaned his head against the white wood and wished he could make it better for her. He hated for anyone to be this torn up, and for what? Meanness? Jealousy? Really? Why would anyone with a soul do this to someone else? Could they truly feel satisfaction or derive happiness from stabbing someone else so ferociously?
I know you're hurting, Bryn. Believe me, I know how it feels to get your emotional teeth kicked down your throat so far that it makes you choke on the last shred of your dignity. I do. Just when you think you can hold your head up and everything will be okay, in walks your mom with this tacky, awful, bright orange fish shirt that she makes you wear to school so that everyone can poke fun at it and call you names. That sick feeling in your gut that tells you you can't take it anymore, that life sucks hard and it won't ever get better. That you're walking on the tightrope, trying to hang on with your toes because you got no safety net. And you're barely one sneeze away from being a stain on the floor, but you're not alone, Brenna. You're not. You've got a lot of people who care about you. People who love you. And who would be devastated if something ever happened to you.
She opened the door. Her dark hair was rumpled, and her eyes bloodshot and swollen. With her mascara smeared around her eyes and down her cheeks, she looked so miserable that it wrung his heart.
I'm not as strong as you are, Nick.
No, you're stronger than me. Shaking her head, she hiccuped. Nick wiped at the tears on her face.
You know, I was having this really crappy day a couple of years ago. It was so bad that I honestly thought about throwing myself off the Pontchartrain Bridge. I was so sick of being kicked and mocked for things I couldn't help or change. Told how worthless and disgusting I was. How stupid and trashy. And as I sat in the cafeteria at a table by myself because I was a social outcast and didn't have enough money for lunch, this beautiful girl came over and sat down beside me. She split her turkey sandwich and homemade cookies with me and bought me a bag of chips and a milk. Do you remember what she said to me? Tears flowed down her face. No. No one can make you feel inferior without your permission.
Eleanor Roosevelt.
Nick nodded. You said to me, don't let them hurt you, Nick. One of you is worth 10 of them. And one day we're going to be grown and everything will be different. They'll matter even less to you then than they do now. So don't even waste a single thought on them and their cruelty. Besides, they wouldn't be attacking you if they didn't think of you as a threat to them. People only go after the ones they're jealous of or scared of. And I asked you that day why anyone would ever be jealous of something like me. Brenna sniffed.
Because there's a light inside you that shines so bright it's hard to look at. You're kind and funny, and you're the smartest boy I've ever met. Most of all, you see potential and opportunity where others see obstacles.
Yeah, Nick said, his throat tight, as he remembered all the times when all he needed was a kind smile from someone, anyone. And Brenna had been that one person that day when he'd felt battered beyond his endurance. Those words etched themselves into my soul, and I think about them a lot when Stone and them get started on me. While other people have kicked me, coming and going, you never did. You are an angel, Brenna. Don't let the haters win. They wouldn't have attacked you had they not felt inferior to you. So you hold your head up and you dare them to come after you. And know that when you do, you're not facing them alone. You've got me, LaShonda, Cody, and dozens of other people who will take on the devil himself for you. She threw herself into his arms and sobbed against his neck.
I love you, Nick. You've always been such a good friend to me.
Patting her on the back, he knew she meant that the same way he did. As friends.
I love you, too.
Now, if we want to be really evil, let's sick Tad on them. She laughed at the mention of her older brother, who'd graduated early and gone on to college up in Baton Rouge.
He would beat them senseless, wouldn't he?
You know it. And he's the one person outside of Bubba and Mark who could track them down and then some. Hey, Brenna, you here? Wiping at the tears on her cheeks, she drew a ragged breath.
Up here, Daddy.
Nick put a little distance between them as her father climbed the stairs. When he reached the landing and caught sight of Nick outside Brenna's bedroom, he stopped dead in his tracks. Now, Nick had always known that Mr. Adams was a large man, and by large he meant really tall and muscular. But right now, with that furious glower on his face, Nick could swear that her father grew about 9 inches taller and his muscles expanded to the size of Rambo's. And he was pretty sure that crazy light in her father's eyes came from an image of him gutting Nick where he stood. Holding his hands up in surrender, Nick took another step away from her. I did not step 1 foot inside her room, sir. I swear to my mother's life. We've been out here the whole time. Brenna wiped at her nose.
I had a really bad day at school, Daddy, and Nick came by to check on me and cheer me up.
Relaxing, her father closed the distance between them. I got a call about it from Mr. Head. It's why I came on home. Nick edged himself closer to the stairs. And now that I know you're not alone, Bryn, I'm gonna head back home. If you need anything at all or someone to talk to any time, day or night, call me. Brenna frowned.
Did you really come all this way just to check on me?
Nick shrugged sheepishly. I don't know anyone else who lives out this way. Her smile warmed him.
Thank you so much, Nick.
No problem. He inclined his head to her before he went to the stairs. Mr. Adams followed him down to let him out the door. Nick paused in the foyer and looked up to make sure Brenna wasn't on the landing before he spoke to her father. Mr. Adams, I don't know what the principal told you, but I'm seriously worried about Brenna. I was in the class that saw those lies about her, and